from the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We have a really interesting show today, ladies and gentlemen. We have a show on green corrections, which is more than the concept sounds. What we're talking about is economic development. What we're talking about is saving millions of dollars for state correctional facilities throughout the United States. We're also talking a lot about inmate training today and using green corrections as a way of transitioning offenders from the prison system to the larger community. We have via Skype from the state of Washington, Washington Department of Corrections, Dan Pachocki. He is Assistant Secretary, www.doc.ua.gov. Also, we have Stephanie Davison. She is a Senior Program Officer for FHI360, www.fhi360.org. Again, both Dan and Stephanie are here to talk about green corrections. Dan and Stephanie, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
All right, good. Before we start, what is FHI 360, Stephanie?
FHI is an international development organization dedicated to improving the lives of individuals internationally.
Okay, and you're under contract to the National Institute of Corrections, which is the producer of today's show. Donna Ledbetter was kind enough to set up the show today. So you're under contract to the National Institute of Corrections of the U.S. Department of Justice, correct?
Yes, we've coordinated several activities for green corrections through NIC for the last few years.
All right, Stephanie, the first question goes to you. What in the name of heavens is green corrections?
Green corrections is a series of programs in which a correctional system can operate their prison system to be more environmentally friendly and hopefully save money, and then also operate education and training programs for offenders geared toward job placement once they exit.
And that's pretty interesting because we were talking before the program, Dan, that the state of Washington has saved, what, well over $3 million by implementing green corrections?
Yes, in between the years 2005 and 2010, we saved about $3.5 million by using basically, environmental greening principles.
And give me a sense as to what you mean by environmentally friendly principles.
Well, I mean, some of it comes down to reducing your carbon footprint. We have zero waste garbage sorting centers, composting. We've done a lot on different energy packages, strategies to save water, strategies to save wastewater. So just in some of those bulk areas about, ways in which you spend money that aren't wise or aren't productive. Mm-hmm. So we've reduced a lot of expenditures in those areas. And ultimately, we've asked questions about why do we buy things only to throw them away and try to eliminate those items upstream also.
People don't understand, Dan, that correctional systems are like big cities. And I don't know how many prisons that you operate there in the state of Washington, but each and every one of them, when I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, we had 23 correctional facilities throughout the state. They all held between 2,000 to 3,000 individuals. I mean, they were operating like little cities. So there are, I would imagine, endless opportunities to go green and save any state a tremendous amount of money.
Absolutely. I mean, there's, what, 2.3 million people incarcerated in federal, state, and county prisons and jails across the country.
Right.
And as you look at some of these strategies, as we've kind of talked about, at least a couple of them, we're giving you examples of a relatively mid-sized prison system. So if you apply that, across the country, I mean, there's lots and lots of money that can be saved just in the sense of savings. And then on top of that, you can begin to use the prison as a mechanism to assist the community in meeting other needs as well.
Well, it's an amazing concept. I'm really enjoying this because in this day and age where all of us within the criminal justice system are, shall I say, stuck with saving taxpayer dollars, I mean, we would do that regardless, but nevertheless, I mean, this is one way of saving taxpayer dollars and providing job training for people coming out of the prison system. Stephanie Davison, why don't you tell me a little bit about that concept of training people, training inmates for jobs in green corrections?
Right. So training individuals for green jobs is very similar to training individuals for regular jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You're just tweaking what you've done.
Right.
For example, FHI has worked with the state of Minnesota to green their programs, in which we worked with their teachers to think about how to use green products and green training concepts to connect inmates to jobs in green fields after exiting.
But give me a sense as to what sort of jobs are we talking about?
Serve jobs. So almost any job can be made green.
Right.
A common one would be carpentry. You may be using green cleaning products, green finishing materials. You'll also learn how to produce your products where you create less waste.
Okay. But are there specific training, like an electrician, like a plumber, like any other person involved in hard skills? I mean, is there green corrections? Does it lead to a career path?
It can, yes. There are a lot of green certifications. They're valued in different ways within different communities throughout the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the U.S. Green Building Council has a LEED certificate to do construction in green manners.
Okay.
That can be great. It requires some time, so it's not necessarily valued in every community.
Right. But, I mean, there are hard and fast jobs where that inmate can come out into the community.
Absolutely.
And find himself or herself employed as a result of being involved in green corrections.
Yes. Some of the solid ones would be landscaping.
Okay.
That's considered a green job. It's something you can be trained within the correctional facility, especially states like Washington have gardens that could be used to train offenders.
Right.
And then they can be enter those sort of jobs once they exit.
Okay, Stephanie, Donna's not mic'd up, so you're going to have to answer this question. Why would the National Institute of Corrections, which is part of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, part of the U.S. Department of Justice, why would the National Institute of Corrections care about green corrections? Why would they be involved?
I think there's two reasons. One is it can save the taxpayers money.
Right.
And two, it can have benefits to the offender upon reentry.
Okay.
There's jobs. There's also some behavioral aspects that we can talk about, different programs that can benefit an offender when they leave.
Okay. Talk to me about the behavioral aspects.
So there's some programs, and I'll let Dan jump into this a little bit more.
Okay.
Such as dog training programs that they've learned or from experience can find that offenders within the yard are calmer, there's less incidents of violence, and then when they exit, reentry is often smoother.
Dan, you mentioned in the pre-show about this concept of making safer correctional facilities. The 14 years that I spent with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, our philosophy was anything that made that day productive for that inmate created a safer prison facility. I would imagine you go along with that thought.
Absolutely, and I believe that's one of the reasons why NIC is interested. In addition to cost containment, cost savings, and reentry, on top of that, what you want to do is make for a safe operating environment in the prison, both for the staff that work there and the offenders that live there as well. So part of what can be done, I suppose, in a greening effort is to create opportunities for an inmate to contribute. And I use that word opportunity to contribute because it's meaningful activity from the sense of an inmate. So whether it's dog restoration or training dogs, or whether it's working with endangered species, both plants and animals, or whether or not it's contributing to scientific research, what the inmates gain from that is a sense that they're contributing to a broader social need.
Mm-hmm.
It's something your family can benefit from. It's something the community can benefit from. And what we found is that inmates that are involved in those kinds of activities tend to be less likely to violate rules. It makes for a more therapeutic environment in that regard. So it does enhance institutional safety and ultimately begins to change the nature of prisons so that community partners and organizations see a prison as a benefit, as someone that can contribute to local geographic community needs. And there are several states that are doing environmental restoration today.
How many states are involved in green corrections, either one of you?
I would say a large proportion of states are involved to one degree or another.
Okay.
For example, many states are involved just because the governor has set forward executive orders that set goals for energy reduction over time.
Right. And Dan, give me an honest answer here. I've been in the criminal justice system for over 40 years. If somebody came to me and said, Leonard, you're now going to be doing green corrections, I would have sat there and went, eh? What is green corrections? Because the order came down on high from the governor's office to reduce expenditures. But after talking with you and talking with Stephanie, I get the sense that this has major payoffs economically, major payoffs in terms of the safety of the institution, and major payoffs in terms of reentry upon release.
It does. I mean, when you think of corrections, the center of the plate is always like evidence-based practices, doing things that reduce the likelihood that inmates reoffend upon release. Over the last 5 years, we've been in extremely lean economic times nationally.
Yes.
And so we tend to engage in issues that are more on the margin that are complementary to an evidence-based framework. So on the one hand, it's low-cost opportunities to program offenders, to get offenders involved in meaningful activity.
Mm-hmm.
Engage more offenders and make prison safer. There's the environmental economics to it that are going to reduce the operating cost over a long period of time, over life cycles. And then, of course, you know, there is the benefit to the community that kind of goes along with that, the reentry, the job training, the skills upon release. So it's really complementary to that framework, and it begins to broaden kind of the scope of corrections in a way that we wouldn't have done in good economic times. I think it is the product of tougher economic times where partners are reaching out for each other in order to accomplish a goal.
All right. It's taking lemons and making lemonade.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Now, but help me with this sense, and a lot of people that are going to be listening to this program today may not be familiar with the inside of prison systems. I have always maintained that you can walk inside of a prison and either feel the lack of tension or feel the tension almost instantaneously as soon as you walk in through the front door. Feel free to correct me. Feel free to disagree. But a lot of the institutions that I've walked into in the past that have been based upon a therapeutic environment based upon the inmates involved in lots of different things. Their days are filled with different issues that they find humanizing. You can walk inside of that prison and immediately feel it. You can immediately feel the lack of tension because the inmates there are, again, they're involved in constructive activities. I'm getting the sense that some of the things that we're talking about with Green Corrections fills that bill. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, and you can certainly, you know, feel the difference in institutions that have a lot of activity and those that don't, in the sense of tension. So, yes, you know, Green Corrections, or the philosophy of a sustainable prison, certainly aids to a much calmer operating tone, a much more pro-social environment, you know, an area that has a greater degree of humanity, which really is an environment that's more conducive to, you know, education or vocational training or cognitive behavioral change.
Right.
That the context of prisons begins to change in a humanizing sort of way.
So we can literally, if all the states in the United States employed Green Corrections, and I am going to come back to you guys for a larger number of specific examples as to what Green Corrections is, because I'm still a bit confused. I understand landscaping. I understand, you know, dealing with animals. I understand mulching. I understand that sort of thing. But I'm getting the sense that it does go a little bit beyond that. I may be missing that. But in essence, you know, what we're dealing with here is stakeholder buy-in. What we're talking about is that you don't do this on your own. I would imagine the state of Washington and other states have to reach out to other people to help them implement a Green Corrections program. Either one of you talk to me about that?
So when we've worked with several states, they find external partners, both from other state agencies and then community-based organizations, are critical.
Okay.
For example, in Maryland, they use the Department of Natural Resources,
right,
to give inmates opportunities to do restoration projects within their community.
Okay, so they take the pre-release offenders and they go out and they do restoration projects.
Yes.
Okay, so again, help me with the cynical side of spending 40 years in the criminal justice system. Okay, so they go out and they dig holes and put in trees. I mean, but we are talking about the possibility of jobs upon release. So anybody can go out and dig a hole and put in a tree.
Right.
So help me understand.
So they're learning
that.
How to maintain the tree in either an urban forest or a traditional forest over the long term.
Okay.
So that's an important skill. Another example in Maryland is right now they're learning how to deconstruct an old prison, and then they'll build signs made out of the old bricks.
Really?
It's an interesting project.
And that's the Maryland Correctional Institute of Jessup.
Yes.
Yes, that's the prison you're talking about.
Yes, I am.
I've been in there 1,000 times,
mm-hmm,
under nasty circumstances.
Yes.
And I was so happy when they closed that prison down. So they're taking, they're dismantling the prison, and they're doing what with it?
And they will be using the bricks from the prison to create signs within the community.
That is neat.
It's a cool project, and it's great because the old building won't be going into the waste stream.
Right.
And all of those products will be in a very visible way contributing to their community.
Well, that is neat. Maryland should start a buy a brick program. This is an authentic brick. Do you know what we used to call that institution? The Cut.
Oh.
Yes. And it has a world famous because it was an old prison. It was called The Cut. Some people say it was named after the railroad cut that ran by it. The other other people say it was nicknamed The Cut because of all the stabbings at the place. So it has a very, very, just in case the listeners are remotely interested, it has a very unique background. Ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a show today on green corrections, and I find this really interesting. Dan Pachocki is the Assistant Secretary, State of Washington Department of Corrections, www.doc.wa.gov. Stephanie Davison, she is a senior program officer with FHI 360. It's www.fhi360.org. They are a contractor to the National Institute of Corrections of the Federal Bureau of Prisons of the U.S. Department of Justice, and they're trying to implement this concept of green corrections throughout the United States. There is a website that I do want to say, which is a website at the National Institute of Corrections, specifically focusing on green corrections, www.nicic.gov/green corrections. I'll give that one more time now, and at the end of the program, www.nicic.gov/green corrections. Donna, I hope I got that correct. Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up. All right, where do we go to with all of this? I mean, you know, are states really buying into this? Are states really, I mean, you said the bulk of the states, Stephanie. I mean, is this something that they're enthusiastically pursuing, or they're saying, oh my gosh, here's another mandate from the governor, another mandate from the federal government, although I don't think it's a mandate. I think we're simply guiding. So as you go out and talk to hard-bitten state correctional administrators, when you talk to them about green corrections, what sort of reception do you get?
It really varies on the state. And it depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to someone who needs to save money,
right,
then they buy into it right away.
There you go.
They understand it. If it's an officer working the yard, it's a little different.
Okay.
And we found that buy-in is really important with those individuals.
Okay.
So, and I'll let Dan speak to this a little bit more, but we found it's important to have an understanding of why green is important when you're trying to do it at a grassroots level. When you're trying to get the officer to get on board with it, they have to understand the why.
Right. But they do see the obvious. I mean, look. You know, I've been in, as I said before, some prisons where there is a lot of programming. And the officers within the prisons with lots of programming are much happier human beings because they don't have to deal. The level of violence goes down. And Dan, quickly correct me if I'm overselling this concept. But in those institutions where there are lots of programs, where they are meaningfully engaged in doing pro-social things throughout the course of the day, either GED programs or substance abuse, or they're doing work-related programs, because I think this is part of correction. Industries. Dan, is this part of correctional industries in the state of Washington?
No, it's actually, it is, but I mean, it's part of the Department of Corrections as a whole, and certainly correctional industries is involved in sustainability activities also.
Right, and we should explain what the correctional industries is. It's jobs programs within prisons.
Correct. I mean, it really does, you know, two or three things. It mimics real-world business activity inside a prison.
Right.
So they create real-world jobs. On top of that, they provide, you know, job training. And then ultimately, they produce products that are useful to state government and certainly our department as well.
Right. But to Stephanie's point of some of the correctional staff, I mean, they may not get it. They may not understand it at the very beginning. But if it calms the institution and makes their day more productive and makes their day safer, I would imagine there's a certain point where they say, okay, now I get this.
I think in the last 5 years that a lot of correctional staff have been sold on the cost containment aspect of it.
Okay.
And it does save money, and it takes it out of areas where stuff like garbage or energy, and it allows us to buy equipment or training or whatever the case may be for line-level staff. So on the one hand, I think they get the cost containment. On the other hand, as you've indicated, correctional officers know that meaningful activity to an offender gets them out of the housing unit, gets them involved in something, and in most cases, with few exceptions, they are less prone to act out, less prone to violate rules.
Now, the other thing that comes to mind is that most of the prisons that I've been in, either in the state of Maryland or beyond the state of Maryland, are pretty stark places. I mean, it's barbed wire, it's concrete buildings, it's not designed to look nice. It's designed to keep inmates in the prison. The first rule of corrections is thou shalt not escape. So we're talking about a pretty stark environment here. And I would imagine if you start using the common areas of the prison system and start landscaping them and start doing things with them, that brings an environment. I mean, look, the average correctional officer has got a tough job. They're in there for 20 or 30 years. The average inmate could be in there for 10 or 20 years or longer. So they're all in this very confined area. It's stark. It's not the prettiest of areas. I'm guessing that if you green up these areas and teach inmates how to sustain them being green, I would imagine that can not transform, but it can certainly add to the pleasantness of the interactions of inmates and staff throughout the course of the day. It simply makes a nicer environment.
Well, it certainly changes the culture or context of incarceration. Even in high security facilities, you can find places to create green space where you can do organic gardening, or you can co-locate dog training areas next to housing units, and certainly bringing dogs into a living unit adds an element to it that is not typically there and will bring a calming aspect. You'll see inmates laughing or smiling, which is not always the case. So, part of what you're doing in bringing nature inside prison is you're creating more of a therapeutic environment, and it's not missed by the offender population, and certainly it creates a better environment for staff as well. So there's great examples out there of how you can do it in very high security prisons, all the way down to low security prisons. There are some model 2,000-bed prisons out there today that are doing everything in the areas of gardening and garbage sorting and composting and raising tilapia and dog training and bicycle restoration that have highly programmatic routines, 100 inmates involved in activities that would be greening activities.
Bicycle restoration, that didn't even cross my mind. And as a fairly avid bike rider, that intrigues me. Tell me more about bicycle restoration.
Well, once again, once you adopt a green principle or a sustainable principle in your mind that you want to do things that are sustainable and also that you want to contribute to the community, you start outreaching a little bit. We probably have 4 prisons that receive bicycles either from police departments or from special interest groups in the community. They bring them in. They oftentimes contribute money. We set up an area where offenders will do bicycle restoration. And then typically they're turned back over to the community and they give them to children in need. So once again, it's an opportunity to contribute to something larger than themselves. It's an opportunity to give back to children. It's an opportunity to work with community partners that are interested in the outcome that you're going to achieve. So essentially, a community begins to see you as a resource rather than a black hole behind a big wall that we just throw money into.
That's an interesting concept. I've never heard of that. I've been part of this system for decades, and bicycle restoration, what a great idea. How long has that been going on in the state of Washington?
I think we started the first one probably 6 or 7 years ago.
Wow.
We probably have a half a dozen prisons that are doing it today. But along those same lines, it's the same thing with doing canine rescue. We have canine rescue in 12 different prisons across the state. And, of course, there are many, many dog advocates and training everything up to assistance dogs. Once again, a community had a need. It's tough environmental times. Mm-hmm. They need help. They provide training to the inmates. It is a therapeutic activity. And then in the end, of course, the community, gets the animal, and we have 100% adoption rate. So as you start going down this line about being a good community partner, there are several states, and we're one of them, that are doing, environmental restoration projects, whether it's raising the endangered Oregon spotted frog or the Taylor checker spot butterfly or endangered prairie plants, that there are community partners, scientists, biologists, U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife, that need assistance in taking care of or nurturing or growing these creatures or plants. They lack funding, and of course, prisons are full of people that have nothing but time.
Right.
Many times they're pretty talented as well. So it, once again, it's another way to bridge and to give inmates an opportunity to contribute, and certainly give a community partner a different view inside a prison, where they begin to see you as a resource that can help solve local problems.
You know, the more I talk to the two of you about this, the more encouraged and the more enthusiastic I become. Because when you first hear the term Green Corrections, Donna, you're not quite sure what it means and where we're going with this. But that's true. I mean, if you're doing a lot of community restoration for inmates at the pre-release level who can safely go out, if you're doing things like repairing bikes or taking care of wounded animals or training dogs, I mean, my heavens, how many millions of dogs are there in this country that need some sort of intervention, or they're simply going to be put down? So it sounds as if the state of Washington is being really innovative in terms of coming up with not just pro-social things for the inmate population to do, but a way for the prison to contribute to the betterment of the larger community.
Yeah, I think that is part of what you'll find across the country. I mean, Maryland is doing stuff around Chesapeake Bay. You know, I know Ohio is doing stuff with the Cincinnati Zoo, and I think they're about ready to start a restoration project on an endangered salamander called the Hellbender.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are different examples out there where people are beginning to engage community partners in a way that provides opportunities for inmates that are therapeutic. They teach empathy, compassion, responsibility. At the same time, you'll have scientists or biologists or both that are interested in these projects. And then ultimately, you know, we have a controlled environment where we can develop protocols around some of these science restoration projects. So you begin to expand the kind of agenda of greening of corrections. I mean, you start with something simple like cost containment, certainly move into areas of training and jobs, and then, of course, you bridge into more local geographic community needs. And we're certainly in need of many, many more environmental restoration projects across this country.
It's an amazing thought. Okay, we're in the final couple minutes of the program. Stephanie, tell me more about I'm hearing all these wonderful things coming out of the state of Washington, and so you're telling me that and Dan did mention that Maryland is doing some stuff, Ohio is doing some stuff. Does everybody get Green Corrections?
Not Did they understand it? Gets Green Corrections, but they could.
They could.
I would encourage people to go to the NIC website,
okay,
and look an example of and look at a guidebook called The Greening of Corrections,
right,
Creating a Sustainable System.
Okay.
We have examples from all over the country, from the Deep South to the Progressive West, and you can see how it can be done anywhere.
Okay. So, and when we are talking about it, as Dan said, $3.5 million worth of savings. So if you do it for no other reason besides saving taxpayers, I mean, that's, you know, 50 times 50 states and 7 territories times $3.5 million, that's a lot of money. And I'm going to give the website out one more time before the close. That will give us greater time for the close. www.nicic.gov/greencorrections. www.nicic.gov/greencorrections. Okay, we're in our final minute of the program. Who wants it? Stephanie, any final wrap-up?
One final word I'd like to say: in the next few months,
yeah,
we will be releasing a challenge on challenge.gov so that state,
really,
departments of correction can share their activities with us, and then we'll be able to broadcast them and share them with a larger community.
Ah,
so
okay.
Keep your eyes peeled for that.
So you're going to pit one state against the other and see who's doing the best, right?
A little bit. We want the examples of the best work that's being done.
And obviously, some of the best work that's being done is being done by the Washington Department of Corrections. So, Dan, how does it feel to be known for something else besides the day-to-day grind of corrections? I mean, do people come to you and say, hey, tell me more about Green Corrections in the state of Washington?
Well, I think it's on the one hand, it's fun. I mean, it is an activity that started kind of on the margin and has worked its way more to the center of the plate. It's really encouraging for us, I suppose all of us, just to see more growth in the area. People like Stephanie, you know, NIC, other states like Maryland and Ohio and Oregon and California. I mean, there's lots of people doing different activities out there. So, you know, one of these days we're going to see a new prison design that's based on sustainable sustainable principles that articulates or identifies everything that we're talking about here. So I'm just interested in seeing more best practice come of it and learning from others and hopefully continuing to push this in a way that's both economically beneficial as well as humanizing corrections and making the operations of prisons safer.
Dan, you've got the final word, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing a show today, have done a show today on green corrections. It's produced by the National Institute of Corrections. Our guests today have been Dan Pachocki, Assistant Secretary of the State of Washington Department of Corrections, Stephanie Davison. She is a senior program officer with FHI360, www.fhi360.org. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your calls, letters, concepts, criticisms, and please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.